tipline.com. Help delete online predators. A message from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council.
Originating from Las Vegas, Nevada, you're listening to LV Rocks. Noise from Vegas. The following is a live LV Rocks original webcast. Visit LVRocks.com for studio cam and live chat room.
And welcome back to another edition of Subject to Discussion live at LVRocks.com, as well as podcasted on LVRocks.com and also on S2DRadio.com. Thank you for everybody joining us live, and thank you for everybody in the chat room. And that was the producer, Mr. Consoler. Thank you very much. And
you're welcome.
Thank you for everybody joining us in the chat room. And we have NetRanger, Giorgio. Let's see, Chris 1019 and Sushi Zero and myself. And after the Political News Digest, we'll bring on August. He is the editor and publisher, whatever it is, of the Progressive Daily Beacon. And then he'll be on. And then in the second hour, Jamie, otherwise known as Scully Girl, she'll be around for the discussion of the latest installments of the Stargate episodes. And then finishing off the second hour will be Dr. the Mad Rocket Scientist, Dr. NetRanger. We'll finish off our review of the fall TV series that are going to be coming on now or starting to air right now. And before I dive into the newspapers, there's this article I heard on Countdown. Oberman had this guy, this clown from Plano, Illinois. It says, furniture store customers score $300,000 in free furniture as Bears shut out the Packers. This guy apparently put an ad in the paper that if the Bears would shut out the Packers from Sunday, you'd get free furniture. And it turns out they did do that. And so now he's looking down the state. And it says, you're staring down the barrel of a $300,000 loss. So, wow. He told Oberman that he had a special event insurance. No kidding. And so he's going to get walloped pretty good there. So, but I thought that was interesting, a little bit of news. And in the today's Las Vegas Review-Journal, they had the, of course, the 9/11 anniversary of, you know, 5 years ago. Yesterday, I was at the New York Hotel and Casino working. Actually, I was off that day, and I woke up, and I turned on TV. I'm like, what is this? And then, I woke up just as the second plane was hitting the second tower. So that was that's my where I was. And the paper says a president calls for unity. And Bush says war on terror must be decisive. And they talk about some local ceremonies honoring the 9/11 victims. And it's about the local public broadcasting PBS affiliate making big changes. We're going to build some huge campus. Boy, that's where all of the money's going for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. They're like a $46 million campus or something like that. So it's unbelievable. And in the Nevada section, they talk about let's see, Water Authority gets a deal. They're going to the Clark County, where Las Vegas is going to tap into some groundwater, underground water from another county, and they're going to have a pipeline. It's a $2 billion project, and they're going to pipe the water in from this White Pine County into Clark County, where Las Vegas is at, because, see, the water shortage is getting a little desperate now. And in the Las Vegas Sun section, which is used to be a separate newspaper, now they merged it into one, giving the Sun a little throwaway section here. Talking about Jimmy Carter is in town because his son is running for Senate against Ensign. You know, he's the guy that gives rectal exams to dogs and cats, John Ensign. But anyway, Jack Carter is Jimmy Carter's son. He's in the hospital with colitis, and Jimmy Carter has been in here campaigning for his son. So that's pretty interesting. And they talk about Whoopi Goldberg getting her own radio show on where the hell is this? On I think on the radio. So it's I don't think she's going to last too much longer, too much too long. I don't think. And in the USA Today they had under headline a view of God can reveal your values in politics, and a nation pays tribute to the heroes, and lingering pain clear in remembrances. And then, I don't know, I just felt a little odd seeing Bush there throwing that little wreath into the water there. I mean, he's looking at a gaping wound. It's been festering for 5 years. He should have gotten off his ass several years ago and gotten him to do something with that land, turn the footsteps of the World Trade Center into a memorial, or turn the whole damn thing into a remembrance park, I think. But I don't know what's going on. I think it's an embarrassment to the country that it's been sent there festering for 5 years now. But they talk about also The Covenant is the top movie of the week, and 8.9 million beat out Hollywoodland, which is the story about the TV Superman. What the hell is it? George Reeves, his mysterious death. And so, and that, we'll move on to the news to you. And today, they had from the blog, the Rude Pundit. He says that advice to Democrats: one talking point to rule them all. Democrats are about to face an untold amount of fear and savagery in the upcoming congressional races. Once the niceties of the primaries are done, the Republican campaign machine is going to go into overdrive. In a way, they'll make these swift boat vet attacks look like flea bites. If you're a Democrat candidate. If you're a Democrat candidate, and you've ever scratched your ass in public, you can be sure that a picture with your hand on your own ass will be spread around with the implication that you're a gay. It's true, because they're so damn desperate to stop this avalanche from coming through. And the chat room is saying a poster at Media Boulevard claims the deficit is decreasing. So I know the trade deficit has gone higher this last quarter, according to Lou Dobbs. But I'm not sure about the deficit itself went down because they projected it so much higher to begin with. And then they forget with the higher gas prices. Hello, we're paying higher gas taxes. So some of that money goes into the general fund. And, of course, the deficit is going to fall slightly. So anyway. And let's see. So it's from the Rude Pundit, the blog. And then also from today, from Lou Dobbs tonight, Al-Qaeda is operating unfettered in the Anbar province in Iraq. You know, this is a disaster over there. Aren't they supposed to be the people we're going after 9-11? Reporter Michael Ware calls the Anbar province an Al-Qaeda meat grinder. Unit leaders have troops they need to hold their own, but to defeat Al-Qaeda, they need more troops. GOP congressional leader John Boehner, he's the one that was handing out checks from the tobacco lobby on the floor of the U.S. Congress years ago. He said he wonders if the Democrats are more interested in the welfare of the terrorists than the American people. And this jackass, you know. It's ridiculous. You know, smear. Who cares? You know, smarmy John Boehner. And also from today, we had from the Washington Post. Washington Post. We had war critics abetting terrorists. This is from Darth Cheney. Captain Count Dracula, Darth Cheney, he says from today's Washington Post, Vice President Cheney offered a veiled attack yesterday on critics of the administration's Iraq policy, saying the domestic debate over the war is emboldening adversaries that believe they can undermine the resolve of the American people. Yeah, there's more of this. If you don't agree with this, you're a Nazi appeaser, you're a Nazi sympathizer. You know, you're against this war, you're akin to being for slavery in 19th century America. I mean, this is nuttiness that they're, you know, what are they drinking over there? You know, get off the Kool-Aid for a while and look at the real world. You know what I'm saying? And I lost my spot here. And it's the war's emboldening adversaries. Yada yada yada. The vice president said U.S. allies in Afghanistan and Iraq have doubts that the United States will finish the job there. And those doubts are encouraged, obviously, when they see the kind of debate that we've had in the United States. Suggestions, for example, that we should withdraw U.S. forces from Iraq simply feed into the whole notion that validates the strategy of the terrorists. So, I don't know. Again, if you don't agree with them, you're a commie, you're a Nazi, all this BS, you know? What happened to, the right to disagree, the right to dissent, freedom of speech, you know, all that get thrown out the window after 9/11? I mean, that's outrageous. And also from the Associated Press, Republicans questioning Bush's Iraq policies. Whoa, here we go. Any other time one would expect Republican lawmaker Kurt Weldon to be an unwavering supporter of President George W. Bush's Iraq policy, but Weldon, the vice chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, is desperate to hold on to his seat in the Philadelphia suburbs. He is sounding more like a Democrat, and the increasing number of dissident Republicans who are talking about a timetable for bringing the troops home. So let me see now. If he's calling for a timetable, will Bush come out and call Weldon a Nazi sympathizer or akin to encouraging slavery in 19th century America? I mean, or is it just because if it's a Democrat that's disagreeing with them? I mean, that's just pathetic. The 10 terms, he ought to go. The 10-term incumbent is preparing this week to file a non-binding resolution. It says a milestone-based approach with criteria determined by military officers should be used by Bush to determine when troops should be withdrawn from Iraq. So, I don't know. And also they had a recent poll right here that about 6 out of 10 Americans think invading Iraq in 2003 was a mistake. Among other Republicans speaking out, Representative Chris Shays from Connecticut said the United States should consider setting a timetable for troop withdrawals. Shays says he hopes to offer a specific time frame, blah, blah, blah. Tom Keene Jr., a Republican challenging Democratic Senator Robert Menendez in New Jersey, has said that Rumsfeld should resign and that Bush has made horrendous mistakes. Wow, pretty strong. And Pat Tiberi of Ohio said he cannot defend how the president laid out the need for going to Iraq and that new leadership is needed at the Pentagon. Yep, that's Rumsfeld, the pinata of the Democrats this year. Just whack away at that pinata. And also from today, a bleaker world emerges from ashes of attack from the Daytona Beach News. Here's how Gerard Baker, the U.S. editor for the London Times, wrote about 9/11 this week. He says, quote, as it prepares to commemorate the 5th anniversary of the attacks, America stands reviled in the world as never before. It is a remarkable turnabout. In the same amount of time that elapsed between Germany's invasion of Poland and D-Day, the U.S. has gone from innocent victim of imaginable villainy to a principal perpetrator of global suffering. So complete has this transformation in the global sentiment that is inconceivable now, should America be attacked again, that the tragedy would elicit the same response. Whoa. The Bush administration went from promising appropriate payback and protection to warmongering with arbitrary retreats on the rule of law at home and dramatic setbacks for democratic reforms in the face of radicalized regimes in the Mideast. Wow, he really let loose, huh? 5 years after 9/11, the world is bleaker, more violent, less safe, and becoming more unstable as the recent war in Lebanon, yada, yada. The Oklahoma City-based National Memorial Institute for the Prevention of Terrorism calculates that since 2001, terrorism has reached epidemic proportions all over the globe, tallying more than 18,000 incidents and 30,000 deaths, not including the war-related fatalities in Iraq and Afghanistan, which would more than double the number. So, what a mess. What a mess Bush has brought to this world. What a mess. Like I say, it's going to take a woman to clean up the White House, I think. And also on Tuesday, Commander has privately expressed needing 3 times more troops. U.S. commanders in Iraq have privately expressed the need for an increase of 3 times the number of troops currently serving in Iraq. The court quote CNN. Officially, the military continues to say that we have an appropriate level of force to do what we have to do in the confines of our mission. So Ramadi, talking about Ramadi, and the whole area is just going up for grabs over there. And Al-Qaeda is almost untouched in the area of operations in the city of Ramadi itself. Al-Qaeda fighters are constantly attacking U.S. troops. Troops and brigades sent to Ramadi are losing, on average, 100 American soldiers and Marines every year. So here's the heart of Al-Qaeda in Iraq, and there's simply not enough troops and no strategy to combat it. Well, that's bleak, isn't it? That's horrible. Yeah, and where is the media pounding, beating Bush over the head with this? Yeah, I mean, I said the New York Times has got to take off the gloves and just rip them apart over this botched war policy. You know, it's Rumsfeld, but Bush is the commander-in-chief. You know, the buck stops with him. So, Can we find him a blue dress, a woman in a blue dress or something? Maybe that'll shake up his last 2 years. In a pivotal year, GOP plans to get personal. They've been personal since he got in. What's the difference between now? From the Washington Post, Republicans are planning to spend the vast majority of their sizable financial war chest over the final 60 days of the campaign attacking Democrat, blah, 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 over personal issues and local controversies, GOP officials have said. So they're going to go straight to the personal and, you know, beat them over the head with the personal issues and things like that. So just a disgusting Karl Rovian, you know, smash and smear he's going to do of the Democrats. Dark milestone. More Americans have now died in Iraq than died on 9/11 from the Huffington Post. Here are the numbers. 3,015 Americans have died in Iraq as of September 9th of this year. 2,666 of these were military deaths, and 349 were civilians. So,
holy cow!
Yeah, it's terrible. Yeah, I was wondering what kind of reaction is going to that number, the number of troops dying in Iraq is going to surpass what we lost in 9/11. But so far, nobody's like a yawn. Ugh. But it's a big deal. I mean, we're, you know, these Iraq, Afghanistan is a disaster. I mean, there we go. And they're sitting there. Uh-oh. Is that the Anbar province? It's the battle for Baghdad right there. I mean, we're right back where we started in this war, you know, when it went in. I mean, what are we accomplishing being there now and being sitting ducks? You know, say pull the troops out to the border and let the Iraqis have at it. I mean, get it over with. This is from Tuesday from a blog called Digby, doing Bin Laden's dirty work. In a very real sense, just as Bin Laden depends upon the Republican leader's fear and loathing campaign to keep him relevant, the Republicans depend upon Bin Laden to keep the terror on simmer. This week, the administration is planning to force the Congress to rubber stamp its heretofore illegal torture and detention regime. This torture and detention regime is making our country less safe and less free by creating more terrorists and degrading the U.S. Constitution. Oh, yeah, they've been wiping their ass with that thing since they got in. But rather than dismantling it, the Republicans are going to institutionalize it. It is only the latest of many such foolish actions our government undertook since 9/11. The question is whether we will continue to allow them to do so. Osama bin Laden's dirty work, if we'll let him keep doing Osama bin Laden's dirty work, or if people of good sense will be able to resist their irrational warmongering and confront terrorists intelligently instead of giving them exactly what they want. So, wow. The articles are getting more and more powerful. I mean, even during 9/11, I was watching some of the coverage, and it was a sad occasion, but boy, they're still letting him have it over this BS, all this nonsense going on, wrapping himself in the thing, and then using the speech Monday night to steer everybody's attention towards Iraq. And then, although they said that Iraq had nothing to do with it, he managed to drop Iraq into this 9/11 speech. I mean, it's just he should be ashamed of himself, Bush. This is also from Monday. In primetime speech, Bush says safety of U.S. troops hinges on Iraq. And from Washington, President Bush used the fifth anniversary of the September 11th attacks on Monday to tell Americans that they were engaged in a struggle for civilization, and then it would be determined in part by the course of the war in Iraq. So if it's the same course that's been going on, it's doomed. The safety of America depends on the outcome of the battle in the streets of Baghdad. And this is a city we were supposed to. We had that city a couple years ago, And then Michael Stickings, when he was on, he said that the Baghdad is going to be a second war for Baghdad. And in a primetime speech from the Oval Office, delivered after a day of solemn ceremonies, Mr. Bush sought to place the war in Iraq in the context of an epic battle between tyranny and freedom, saying the campaign against global terrorism was the decisive ideological struggle of the 21st century. I'm surprised he could get all that out. Those are $5 words for $10 words for a $5 president, and the calling of our generation. So I don't know. I think the struggle we have against tyranny and freedom is the American people versus this despicable administration. That's what I think, and the GOP enablers in the Congress. And if we do not defeat these enemies now, Mr. Bush said, we will leave our children to face a Middle East overrun by terrorist states and radical dictators armed with nuclear weapons. So, and who's giving these countries all these nuclear weapons to begin with? You know, we should trace that back as well. And from Tuesday, President tries to win over a war-weary nation. President Bush's Oval Office speech Monday night was the culmination of 2 weeks of efforts to rally the nation behind his botched policy and doomed presidency by summoning the memory of September 11th, 5 years. 5 years after that indelible day, however, this president's capacity to move the public is severely diminished. Oh, I get moved when I see him speak. I want to kick the TV or throw up. There were echoes of the language and logic Bush invoked 5 years ago when he united a stricken nation, looking to him for both comfort and leadership. But he was speaking to a different nation last night. Setbacks in Iraq have soured a majority of Americans on that mission. Falsely optimistic predictions of progress have undermined the administration's credibility. Oh, yeah, the rosy scenarios. And, oh, I have a dickens of a time finding any statements I made. You got your mind, This whole administration and Condoleezza Rice is going along, throwing out all those barbs and everything. She's out of her mind as well. And let's see, where am I here? Setbacks in Iraq. A majority of Americans question fundamental elements of the president's argument, including his contention that Iraq is a central front in the war against terrorism. Cumulatively, it leaves decidedly uncertain whether this week's flood of rhetoric and remembrance can alter Bush's perilous circumstances. At a critical moment for the future of the Iraq mission and the president's own domestic standing, 56 days before the midterm elections. So, yeah, I think it's all over with for at least in the House of Representatives for the GOP. At least I hope so. And also for Monday from the Washington Post, a situation called dire in West Iraq. Anbar is lost politically, as a Marine analyst says. So, they're going to be court-martialing him, Rumsfeld and them, for speaking like this. The chief of intelligence for the Marine Corps in Iraq recently filed an unusual secret report concluding that the prospects for securing that country's western Anbar province are dim, and there is almost nothing the U.S. military can do to improve the political and social situation there, said several military officers and intelligence officers familiar with its contents. So it was the second story, right, or third one about that. Still, I mean, it goes to the point, the disaster in Iraq. I mean, it's how much more money we can pour into it. It's starting over again. $500 billion, now we're going to put another $500 billion more into it. That'd be $1 trillion. I don't know. And poll, was it El Jimbo? Can't stand the fact we were winning, can you? How would you defeat them? Oh, to me? I mean, to be who? The Bush administration? You just trumpet up all this stuff about the Iraq, and that's how you defeat them. There's no plan, there's nothing, no dialogue. You have some kind of dialogue with all the countries of the world. I think the world was more united like it was after 9/11. We'd be a lot better place, But, oh, no, this cowboy diplomacy, it's us against the world. When all these countries offered, to send help, even after Katrina, they took them days to respond to these countries offering to send aid and everything. I mean, you can only snub your nose at the world for so long before they get sick of it, But, anyway. And a poll, more Americans blame Bush for 9/11 from CNN. Almost half of the Americans blame the Bush administration for the September 11th terrorist attacks, up from almost a third in the past 4 years, according to CNN. The poll was released on Monday. In the poll conducted by Opinion Research, 45% said either a great deal or a moderate amount, up from 32% in a June 2002 USA Today poll. But the Clinton administration did not get off lightly. Some 41% of the 1,004 respondents blamed his administration a great deal or a moderate amount for the attacks. So, anyway. And it's actually, there's blame going around and all that. But, I mean, we're a country of freedoms, and we can't give up all of our freedoms and build a big wall around this country. I mean, that's part of the risk we take in this country, is our freedom of speech. We're a very open society, so I mean it's the good and the bad. And let's see, where are we at here? Senator Graham, Iraq is a mess. He said we have screwed up. It's Lindsey Graham, the mealy mouth guy from South Carolina. He said Republican Senator Lindsey Graham said the United States has screwed up in Iraq, but the idea of the war was correct, and pulling out now would lead to more bloodshed across the Middle East. He says he knows that Iraq is a mess, and we have screwed up 7 ways from Sunday, he said. Wow, that's a Republican saying that. So, And also from The election blog called Election Central from Greg Sargent. He says, who destroyed post-9/11 unity? One endearing truth about our politics today that big news organization and mainstream commentators can't bring themselves to acknowledge is that, yes, there is a party which bears the great majority of the blame for the destruction of whatever sense of national unity prevailed after the 9/11 attacks. It's true, the blame for killing that short-lived period of unity and from bringing about the years of bitter partisanship around national security that followed should mainly be placed squarely at the feet of the GOP. That's just something one doesn't say, he goes on. So it's Greg Sargent. So, and it's actually, it's an opportunity squandered. I mean, the country was so united, and then it is one off. I mean, if it's Afghanistan, fine. We can't capture the guy. He's been gone for 5 years on the loose. You know, we can find Tom Cruise and what the hell is his name at a football game. How come we can't find Osama bin Laden? Yeah, you know, we got satellites. You know, the American military and the intelligence community. I mean, the power of this country. We can't find this one guy 5 years in the mountains of between Afghanistan and Pakistan. I mean, good Lord! And they dismantled the department, unit set up to track him down. I mean, that's insane. He's the one that did all this. You know, can you imagine if Bush would have captured him and killed him? You know, there's no way the Republicans would be reelected for the next 20 years. No. I mean, it's insane. You know, he's used this to go off into Iraq when he should have concentrated on Afghanistan. And now Al-Qaeda, now they're back in control, and creeping back into the control in Afghanistan, and now they're a big trouble in Iraq again. So, anyway. Unwinding Bush is from Reason magazine from Monday. To those disinclined to suspend judgment for 50 years, however, Bush's course is looking less like a long road than a dead end. Many conservatives have lost faith. In a recent interview with CBS News, no less than conservative luminary William F. Buckley, the very commentator, declared, he said, there will be no legacy for Mr. Bush, for the disenchanted again, including me. The relevant points of reference now are not Churchill or Truman, but Nixon and Carter. Oh, yeah, I mean, Bush's foreign policy makes Carter look like FDR. I mean, I'd rather have Carter in there with his foreign policy and this the mess of the Bush administration. I mean, get real. The fiscal mess, Bush's tax cuts and spending increases, turned a $236 billion federal surplus in fiscal 2000 into a deficit of more than $400 billion 4 years later, an astonishing reversal. The Iraq mess, the invasion was a gamble, the failure to scrub the pre-war intelligence and properly manage the post-war occupation were mistakes. And I saw something last night about Rumsfeld. He didn't want any kind of, all he wanted to do was get the plan for Iraq is as far as getting to Baghdad. Nothing for the post-war occupation or rebuilding. All he wanted to know is getting to Baghdad. That's all he cared about. I mean, and he's supposed to be this genius in the Defense Department? I don't know. And like I said, hopefully they'll find, while he's in there recovering from his rotator cuff surgery, they'll get his head out of his ass and get him to fix his mess in Iraq. International crisis. The Iraq adventure fueled a precipitous decline in America's image abroad, and Bush's pugnacious style during his first term and his tin ear for foreign opinion made a bad situation worse. That's what I'm saying. That's what he should have been more open to the world after 9/11, and been more inclusive. Make more trips overseas. You know, let include these countries in. You know, that way the world would be a little better off, I think. This is more than just a public relations problem. The national prestige is diplomatic capital. The more unpopular America becomes, the higher the price of foreign support. Mark Malik Brown, the UN's Deputy Secretary General, said recently that suspicion of the United States has grown to a point where many otherwise quite moderate countries are inclined to oppose anything we favor. So there you go right there. And an extra-legal terrorism war. If the country seriously intends to prevent terrorism, then spying at home, detaining terrorist suspects, and conducting tough interrogations are practices that the government will need to engage in for many years to come. Instead of making proper legal provisions for these practices, Bush has run the war against the jihadism out of his back pocket as a permanent state of emergency. He engages in legal ad hocery and trickery. Treats Congress as a nuisance rather than a partner, and circumvents outmoded laws and treaties when he should be creating new ones. So that's why you had the FISA court and everything else. He could have gone around that, gone to the FISA court and got all this eavesdropping BS approved and everything. I mean, how come he didn't do it? He knew they say no because Clinton did the same thing. Clinton went, he went to the GOP and the Senate. And they said no. So, but George should listen to his father and stay away from Iraq. Yes, that's right. Bush's father said going to Baghdad would have created a civil war, would have splintered the country, and his father was right. Clinton slams GOP on election strategy. He says, they've trotted out that dog for the last 3 years, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Former President Bill Clinton asserted here Saturday that if Republicans were serious about national security, they'd carry out the recommendations of the bipartisan 9/11 Commission instead of regularly using the issue to pound the political opponents. Bill Clinton says they've trotted out that old dog for that. That's a good impersonation. What do you think, Con? No? You like my... I feel your pain. I've been practicing all week. They've tried that old dog for the last three elections. I can't do it. And it's got mange all over it, he said. Clinton said, told an enthusiastic crowd of 2,000 packing the pageant for a morning Democratic rally. What pageant was this he was at? Beauty pageant. Miss Teen USA. Hand-to-hand combat with the Democrats should do to win the midterms and the 06 race for the White House. 08. What's this typo in here? I'd like to be up that presidential election 06. Wouldn't that be nice? September 8th, where am I here? I'm skipping around. The Let the Talking Heads and the Lawyers Debate the New U.S. Army Field Manual Rules about the Interrogation. Democrats should play rope-a-dope, absorb the blows, and put the spotlight on President Bush's empty rhetoric about winning the war against terrorism. 5 years after 9/11, Osama bin Laden is still on the loose. Hello. And Americans don't think the Iraq war is making them safer. What Bush did in his speeches last week is the national security version of the perp walk. Wow. By rolling out a rogues gallery of scary-looking Middle Eastern men, Bush transformed a debate about a ruinous war in Iraq into a hand-to-hand political combat over which party has captured more bad guys. Given Bush's sorry record and all of the other conversations the media could be having, the renewed emphasis on terrorism is good news for the Republicans. The Democrats can't change the channel. So I think with that, we'll take our break, and I'll bring on Mr. August from the Progressive News Daily Beacon. Yes, so we'll be right back in just a moment, and this is subject to discussion.
And now a special
live. There we go.
It is to our deep national shame, and ultimately it will be to the president's deep public regret, that he has followed his Secretary of Defense down the path of trying to tie those loyal Americans who disagree with his policies or even question their effectiveness or execution to the Nazis of the past and the Al-Qaeda of the present. Today, in the same subtle terms in which Mr. Bush and his colleagues muddied the clear line separating Iraq and 9/11 without ever actually saying so, the president quoted a purported Osama bin Laden letter that spoke of launching, quote, a media campaign to create a wedge between the American people and their government. Make no mistake here, the intent of that is to get us to confuse the psychotic scheming of an international terrorist with that familiar bogeyman of the far right, the, quote, media, unquote. The president and the vice president and others have often attacked freedom of speech and freedom of dissent and freedom of the press. Now Mr. Bush has signaled that his unparalleled and unprincipled attack on reporting has a new and venomous side angle. The attempt to link by the simple expediency of one word, media, the honest, patriotic, indeed vital questions and questioning from American reporters with the evil of Al-Qaeda propaganda. That linkage is more than just indefensible. It is un-American. Mr. Bush and his colleagues have led us before to such waters. We will not drink again. And the president's rewriting and sanitizing of history so it fits the expediencies of domestic politics today is just as false and just as scurrilous.
A failed Austrian painter published a book in which he explained his intention to build an Aryan superstate in Germany, take revenge on Europe, and eradicate the Jews. The world ignored Hitler's words and paid a terrible price.
Whatever the true nature of Al-Qaeda and other international terrorist threats, to ceaselessly compare them to the Nazi state of Germany serves only to embolden them. Moreover, Mr. Bush, you are accomplishing in part what Osama bin Laden and others seek, a fearful American populace easily manipulated and willing to throw away any measure of restraint, any loyalty to our own ideals and freedoms for the comforting illusion of safety. It thus becomes necessary to remind the president that his administration's recent Nazi kick is an awful and a cynical thing. And it becomes necessary to reach back into our history for yet another quote from yet another time and to ask it of Mr. Bush. Have you no sense of decency, sir?
We're conscious of conscience of folks flying.
Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, Abu Zubaydah, Ramzi Al-Shib, or whatever the guy's name was.
And we are back, subject to discussion live at LVRocks.com as well as on S2DRadio.com. And we'll be joined now by August, the editor of the Progressive Daily Beacon. And in just a moment. And it was thank you to Keith Olbermann for that stirring commentary about the hole in the ground in New York. And so there we go. August, are you there, sir?
Hello, Sean. How are you?
Fine, sir. How are you doing?
Not too bad. I've got a little bit of a cold, so if you think the phone goes dead here, it's just me hacking, and I'll try to cut it off.
Oh, okay. No problem. I endorse the Zekum, or the hell that is, that cold remedy there that Rush Limbaugh promotes. You know, I never thought I'd agree with him on anything, but that I do agree with him on.
Yeah. I tried a little bit of that. It seemed to help a little bit.
Yeah, it's expensive, though, so... anyway, so you're the founder, editor, and pretty much everything of the Progressive Daily Beacon, correct?
That's correct, yep.
Now, how long have you been running this? It's not really a blog. It's more like an online newspaper.
Right, yeah. I mean, it's designed to be an online newspaper for, people of the liberal and progressive sort of political persuasion. And it's been running since, really since February of 2005.
Wow. So you've been I'm on your website now, and of course they talk about the Bush's shameful 9/11 address to the nation. I watched that, and it took him all of what, 2 minutes to weave Iraq into that mess.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty incredible that he spent. I read the transcripts actually after he was done, and I think more than 50% of the speech was dedicated to Iraq and trying to weave this notion of a war on terror into his war with Iraq. They seem to have no shame, and it's just incredible to me that with all of the information out there now, they continue to I guess as Clinton said, to try to hunt that old dog. And what's even more amazing is that, you know, apparently there's still 35 to 39% of the country that buys into it. Which is disheartening, really.
Well, it's the ditto heads and the brain dead, mind numbed Republican GOP voters and the conservatives in general. You know, especially the neocons. I mean, they've gotten such a blinders on about this mess in Iraq and everything, and just the shameful way that this administration's been carrying themselves on. You know.
Actually, I think it's a byproduct of propaganda. Once they've done studies on this kind of thing ever since, of course, the 30s and 40s with the rise of the Nazis. A lot of people have looked at the effects of propaganda. And when you think about Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Fox News and people like that, it's actually nothing more than propaganda, the same kind of propaganda that the Nazis had used to convince people to agree with their agenda. And once somebody buys into the propaganda and they act on that, you are by personal association then guilty. And so it's very difficult to break that hold on propaganda, because then if people were to admit that, the true Kool-Aid drinkers, my goodness, they'd have to admit to themselves that in some way they're responsible for the deaths of between 60,000 and perhaps 200,000, depending on which report you read, dead Iraqis. And that's a heavy burden to carry. And that's part of the hold that propaganda has on people.
Yeah. Did you see that interview Bush did with Matt Lauer? I thought Bush was going to reach over and strangle him. Did you watch that?
No, actually, I didn't, but I saw something online. I guess Bush complimented him, maybe, on his abs or something ridiculous like that.
Oh, Laura Bush did that. Laura. I'm talking about President Bush.
Well, you can't blame Laura. I mean, look what she's got to deal with.
I don't know. But, I mean, yeah, he was Matt Lauer interviewed him on the Today Show, and it's the look on Bush's face. I mean, he was, I don't know why, if he's not going to like these interviews, I don't know why he grants them, you know?
If people are finally starting to ask him tough questions, they're certainly not going to enjoy that.
Yeah, well, because Lauer is asking about this, what techniques they're using to torture these people, and if you're using waterboarding, and Bush refused to admit it. I mean, it's been in all the documents have been released and everything else that they are waterboarding these people. Why is Bush says I don't want our enemies to know what we're up to, and it's just like, oh, come on. I don't think he knows what they're doing,
Well, all you have to do is remember Abu Ghraib and some of the photos from that. I mean, my God, there were people in body bags that they killed while torturing. And they still continue to try and link Al-Qaeda with Saddam and that kind of thing, which was absurd in the first place. And anybody that really wanted to think about it could have figured that out long ago. Bin Laden, his biggest problem was secularism. Governments in the Middle East, and he wanted to topple those governments. Well, Saddam was a secularist. He was a lot of things. He was a bad guy. He was ugly, terrible, horrible. But he was a secularist, not the kind of guy that Bin Laden would actually want to join forces with. But even today, Tony Snow, despite the 9/11 Commission report, despite Friday's Senate Intelligence Committee report stating, that there were no ties between Saddam and Al-Qaeda, and that in fact Saddam was trying to hunt down this Zarqawi guy and do away with him because he viewed him as a threat to his government. Tony Snow, even today, is saying, oh no, there was a link between Al-Qaeda and Saddam.
Oh yeah, yeah. He reiterated that even after that report came out, said there was no link between Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein at all,
Right, exactly. And I mean, Cheney and Rice were both on the news shows this Sunday doing the same thing, even though, and Russert, in his usual ineffectual way, tried to point out the fact that the Senate Intelligence Committee report refuted what Cheney was saying, and of course Cheney just said, well, I haven't read that yet. Right, okay.
Oh yeah, I saw Cheney. He was seething at Russert's,
Yeah, well, it's too bad, though, that Tim Russert, I would like to see somebody like Keith Olbermann get a hold of Cheney, and if it didn't break out into a fist fight, I think Olbermann would really be willing to ignore whatever lie Cheney was telling and then get right back after him and make him actually answer the
question. True. Well, I think Olbermann's like the rest of us. We've just gotten sick of this BS we've been being fed since 9/11, because I think we all feel betrayed by this administration, because after that we all felt united and yada yada yada, and then they're supposed to go off and hunt down Al-Qaeda, hunt down Osama bin Laden, and now we it's 5 years later, and that hole in the ground, it's still there. The president should have commandeered that situation. They had something up there, a remembrance park or something. Why is that hole still there?
Well, right, exactly. And the hole is still there for the same reason that New Orleans is still a mess, because these people have no ability whatsoever to actually follow through and to do anything with anything resembling competence.
Well, I mean, just 9/11 was an attack on the country. I mean, the Katrina was a natural disaster, but I mean, with 9/11, this wrangling over what's going to go up and stuff. I mean, Bush should have grabbed a hold of the situation, appointed somebody to run it, into Colin Powell or something like that, and said this, the footprint of the buildings themselves is going to be a remembrance park, and it'd be like a little memorial, I think, like a wall or something like that. I mean, it's just common sense. Why 5 years is it still sitting there, after they dug up all the debris, it's still sitting there?
Well, it's easy, at least to me, the way that I look at it. I mean, these people are really good at destroying things, but they don't actually have any intention of fixing anything. Supposedly, they fixed Medicare, and now we find that with the donut hole, there are millions of people, elderly without coverage. They fixed it, right? I mean, but that's how they fixed it. Same with, and the hole in the ground in New York is very much the same phenomenon that's happening in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. These people are so incompetent, so completely incapable of governing, that once something is broken, they have no ability to put it back together. Mm-hmm. They have no interest, really. I mean, Katrina makes a great photo op.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if that disaster is going to be there for the rest of Bush's term, you can bet he'll go down there and take advantage of it.
Oh, yeah.
If the hole in the ground in New York is there for the rest of Bush's term, you can bet he'll go there and lay a wreath mm-hmm. and use it to bludgeon the country into following whatever insanity it is that he's conjured up for the country.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think Bush, you know, instead of throwing the little reef and into the reflecting ponds there, he should have gave it's 5 years. I think he should give more of a fiery speech. You know, this is the United States of America. You know, anything happens like this again, all hell's going to break loose in whatever country is harboring these people, or, you know, something, you know.
Well, he's kind of lost all credibility there as well, hasn't he? I mean, that's what he said before, that, you know, you're either for us or against us, and anyone that's harboring terrorists, you know, we're going to come and get you. Well, they tried that in Iraq. Well, Iraq wasn't actually harboring any terrorists to begin with, not at least not any al-Qaeda terrorists or any terrorists associated with 9/11.
Mm.
And they went in there and just made a complete disaster of it. So which country is going to tremble? I mean, you have China now, you know, thumbing their nose at the United States. Mm. Recently, their ambassador had said that, really, you know, the United States just needs to shut up. I mean, he said that straight out. Those were his words. The United States just needs to shut up.
Yeah.
So the thought that Bush could say anything and on a global sense have any credibility or cause anyone to fear or tremble, you know, it's just not possible anymore.
Yeah.
They've seen what these people can do.
Yeah. Well,
and even their proxy war, which is what the last... dust up in the Middle East between Hezbollah and Israel was. Bush and the neocons were pushing Israel to continue that war, and it ended up being a complete and total fiasco for Israel.
Mm.
And, you know, so the world looks at what the Bush administration is capable of, and they have no reason to fear.
Yeah.
I mean, the people we supported in Somalia were quickly dispatched by the Islamic fundamentalists there, and they've taken over Somalia.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is the record of the Bush administration's national security, right?
Yeah. Well,
one failure after another.
Yeah, well, same thing with Afghanistan. I said that's it's fallen back now, and the warlords are back, you know, back and gaining more control, and the opium, we call it, of all that, it's the highest it's been since before the war.
Exactly.
Yeah.
More Bush national security success. The Taliban is coming back stronger than ever there.
Yeah.
I mean, they basically, the Afghan U.S.-backed government maybe controls the capital. Everything outside of that has fallen more or less into the hands of the Taliban again.
Yeah.
And of course, they don't talk about that, but and they have a little bit recently, and they've tried to spin that like they've tried to spin the Iraq war, talking about this great success for democracy there. But it's really not. It's just another disaster.
Yeah, I don't know how they could sit there and say, you know, point to Afghanistan and say it's a success story in this war. Are you out of your mind? Are you not watching the news and seeing all the stuff going on over there?
Exactly, but they don't care. For them, it's not about reality or anything else. It's all about spin.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all it is. If you can, they can spin any failure into success.
Yeah.
Because the corporate media doesn't actually report the news anymore. It's really easy for them to do. If there's something that happens in Iraq, let's say 30 people are killed,
mm-hmm.
What the AP and ABC especially will report, if you read their reports, 60 to 70% of it will be the administration's spin. 15% will be actual facts relating to what happened. And then the rest is basically either throwaway paragraphs or a report from the U.S. military.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not even they're not even trying to report actual news. They're just reporting spin. So if whatever the disaster is, it's really easy for the Bush administration to spin it into a success because they know that the corporate media in this country isn't actually going to report the truth anyway.
Yeah.
And it's lazy journalism, part of it. The other part of it is that these corporations are giving Republicans a lot of money to get reelected because they know that they will do whatever it is that they want them to do. It's really a sad situation.
Yeah.
You have people in the blogosphere now doing the jobs of what used to be journalism in this country and doing a better job on shoestring-type budgets than ABC, CBS, NBC could ever hope to do. But it's only because they want to do it.
Yeah.
You know, they want to report the news. Whereas these corporate-owned entities don't. They have no interest. It's an entertainment division for them.
Mm.
And so it's really easy for the Republicans, and especially Bush, to look at and tell the people that Afghanistan is this great, huge success, and to say that Iraq is a great success, because the news media isn't really going to cover it. And if they do, they won't give it they won't cover it well, they won't cover it honestly, and they won't give it the attention that it actually deserves.
Yeah. Actually, I'm on your site now. So you had your main page, and now page two is the presents with what's the Buzz Flash, right?
Right, right. Yep.
And then on there you have 5 years. Now, did you watch that Path to 9/11? I did. I mean, it wasn't, you know, a lot of people say, well, it's, you know, it actually, you know what, it made, I don't know, a lot of people are saying it's going to make Clinton out look bad in this, but he looked like he was the face of evil for them over there. They're shooting the walls with his image on the screen there, and they're blasting away at him on the movie. Did you see that?
No, actually, I avoided it like the plague, and simply because nobody refutes the fact that they were in the mockudrama, I guess is what the people on the internet have called it. They were putting words in people's mouths that they didn't actually say, which in this hypercharged political atmosphere is quite dangerous. I mean, it's turned out to be nothing more than a propaganda film, unfortunately.
Yeah, and then I got your Progressive Daily Beacon Humor about the Senate Intelligence Committee, no link between administration and reality. The Senate panel emphasized that the administration was about as well acquainted with facts as Muhammad Atta was with a bar mitzvah.
I post a lot of Don Davis's stuff on there. Mm-hmm. He runs the Satirical Political Report, and he's actually written a book. And Don does a lot of really good humor, and he knows exactly how to stick the knife into the rib of the guilty parties without generally offending too many people, which I think is really good.
Yeah, it's funny. And then it goes on that Shooter Cheney had more meetings with oil company executives in one day than Atta had with Iraqis his entire life. So.
yeah, I love Don. He had a really good wit. But you mentioned what's the Buzz Flash. And I just the reason that I have a Buzz Flash section on the site is because they have been really, really helpful.
Hmm.
It's really difficult because there are something like 46 million blogs today.
Yeah.
And it's really difficult for new sites or new blogs to get noticed in Buzz Flash. And the folks over there have been really supportive of the work that I've been trying to do with the Progressive Daily Beacon. And so that was their really to kind of honor them.
Well, very nice. Well, yeah, because I've talked to the people there from Buzz Flash as well. They're from Chicago, so they're very, very, very nice people. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And once again, this is August. He's the editor, publisher, everything of the Progressive Daily Beacon, right?
Right.
And now you got page three. Now page three is what a little bit more like from the wires, right? From the Washington Post and the New York Times and them.
Right, what I have posted there are the RSS feeds from Washington Post, New York Times, Minneapolis Star Tribune, and then also some progressive sites like Think Progress and Media Matters, and then a World News section. I wanted to have the World News section on there, even though most of it's aimed at the United States, just so that people could get a feel for the differences between reporting between our domestic corporate media and some of the media overseas.
Yeah, and then you have a down at the bottom there. It's an amazing site. You have the PDB blog roll, and you got the Hollywood Liberal. I think he's going to be on next week on the program. I talked to him. So that'd be interesting. Have you spoken to the Hollywood liberal? No.
Briefly, in a couple of emails now and then, a while back though, before he kind of updated his site, and I'd suggested to him that he might want to do that, and it looks like he did, and it's really that's another site with a lot of good humor. Mm-hmm. I like the way time to time they'll doctor pictures and put words in the mouths of Bush and his cronies, and so I really like that site a lot. Mm-hmm. And another one, I guess since we're talking about it, is called Karina's Blog.
Hmm.
I feature a lot of her stuff, but there's not a lot of female bloggers out there, comparatively speaking. And she has a hard-hitting, dry wit that I think, and it's a female voice, that I think a lot of people would really enjoy.
Hmm. Interesting. And what else? You also have the Sunday section here, which has the Sunday feature. It's amazing. You put a lot of work in this. Is this your full-time gig?
No.
No?
I wish I were getting paid for it. I beg for bucks once in a while and get a little bit. But, no, I work a full-time, well, more than a full-time job. And then try to do this in the mornings and the evenings when I can. Yeah. It takes up a lot of my time, but it's a labor of love, right?
Huh. And where's the Progressive Daily Beacon based out of? What state?
We're in Minnesota now.
Minnesota. You just got back from your honeymoon, right? Congratulations.
Yep. Oh, thanks. Yeah, yes. I had this cold starting on the morning of the honeymoon. And but, you know, sucked it up, did the husbandly thing. We went on hikes and horseback riding and that kind of thing, and so, yeah, I had to perform my husbandly duties and try to make sure that we had a good time.
Very good. Now, looking at the midterms coming up, how are you thinking things are going to turn out?
You know, I don't really know, because I can't say that I have any confidence in our electoral process anymore. Isn't that terrible? In the United States of America, and I just have no confidence in the way that we count votes anymore. First of all, I guess I'm a little bit disappointed, considering all of the blunders with Iraq, etc., and the many GOP-controlled Congress fiascos and corruption and all of those things. I'm stunned that these races are still that close. I think the Democrats will probably pull off the House. The Senate's going to be another question. However, Harold Ford down in Tennessee has actually pulled ahead now of the Republican candidate on there, so that's promising and probably quite surprising for Republicans that in the heart of the Bible Belt, an African-American Democrat is able to surge ahead of their candidate. So that's promising.
Well, Harold Ford, he's very moderate. I mean, he's anti-abortion and things like that. So he's plus his family's been involved in Tennessee politics for years. So I'd like to see Harold Ford get going and maybe be a presidential or vice presidential candidate. I'd like to see him run before Barack Obama, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I like Barack Obama, though. He's a very intelligent, kind of Clinton-esque sort of guy. My worry is, and I remember Rob Call discussing this with you last week as well, my concern with a lot of the Democrats today is the control that the Democratic Leadership Council holds over these people. I mean, Hillary Clinton's bought and paid for by the DLC. And they're really kind of, to me, almost more dangerous than today's Bushist Republicans in the sense that these guys are corporatists as well. And they're trying to bring that into the Democratic Party. And the problem with that is that we already have a Republican Party that kowtows to the corporate needs. It would be nice to have a party in this country that's more concerned about workers and everyday Americans.
Mm. Well, are you a big supporter of Russ Feingold?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I love Russ. I grew up in Wisconsin, actually. Mm. And, you know, I don't always agree with Feingold. And to me, it's really not important to always agree with the politician. What I like about Russ Feingold is that the stances he has taken have been unpopular at the time. And now you find more and more that he was right all along.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's what I like about him. When I was living in Minnesota, Jesse Ventura was actually the governor here, and I remember when he got voted in, and I thought, oh my God, how embarrassing is this, you know? But I actually learned to appreciate the guy, not because I always agreed with him, because he would say some pretty absurd things now and then, but because the guy was honest, and he would just tell you what he was thinking, what he believed, and I respected that.
Yeah, yeah. So.
And it wasn't a phony honesty or a phony integrity like you get with the Bush administration and a lot of today's Republicans. Tom DeLay comes to mind, Bill Frist comes to mind. You know, a phony sense of integrity when really these guys totally lack any honor or integrity.
True. Well, on that phony note, August, we'll let you go at the end of our segment with you.
All right. Well, thanks for having me, Sean.
No problem.
I appreciate it.
We'll have you on again. Well, thank you very much for being on.
Yep, have a good night.
You too. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And that was August from the Progressive Daily Beacon. We thank him very much for being on the program. And we'll take our break for the hour. We'll come back in the second hour with our review of the Stargates with Scully. And then we'll end it with the review, the finish off a review of the fall TV programs with the mad rocket scientist, Dr. Nett Ranger. So we'll be right back in just a couple of minutes on Subject to Discussion. Thank you.
originating from Las Vegas, Nevada, you're listening to LV Rocks. Noise from Vegas.
And welcome back to the second hour of Subject Discussion. Once again, live at LVRocks.com as well as on S2DRadio.com. Thank you for everybody joining us live, and thank you for everybody in the chat room. BSG Fan PT, Chris 1019, El Jimbo, Giorgio, Elo Raptor, Net Ranger, Scully Girl, and myself. And what else? There's a message board. If you want to go onto the message board and let me have it, El Jimbo is wants challenging me to a debate. He says, no, Limbaugh does not do debates. I, on the other hand, invite debates. In my view, they're truly, oh, for crying out loud. I don't understand this. Why, you know, Limbaugh, you know, he can say whatever the hell he wants, and take OxyContin and Viagra and all that, not in his name, of course. And then nothing happens to him. You know, you get an opposing viewpoint, and all of a sudden everybody wants to come on and debate you. Yeah, you know, what the hell? This is a democracy. Aren't I entitled to my opinion? You know, I mean, Ray can say, I pay for this damn microphone, right? So anyway, well, that will bring on Jamie for a review of the Stargate episodes. And there we go. And Jamie, are you there?
Yep.
Oh, that music just makes me sad every time I hear it. We're getting towards the end there, you know?
Yeah.
And any updates on SG-1?
I did read still again that they're trying to do it in other ways. I know in the TV guide there was a lot of letters. People were upset, and then one person was like saying, you know, before they told everybody they're canceling it, they should have told them, you know, that they're trying to do other things because everybody got, like, mad ahead of time.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know what's going on, though.
Yeah, they should. Well, because I know sci-fi, you know, stuck a fork in it because they said they won't let it go off into its onto another network. And I understand how they have the permission to, you know, can do that. I mean, it's not, they don't own that show, but I guess.
I don't know, unless they signed away the rights when they used it.
Probably. Yeah, well, because somebody said that. That when Browder was coming on at the MGM studios, they wanted to change the name of the series to Stargate Command, but Sci-Fi said no, they want to keep it as SG-1, so I guess, you know.
Yeah, but I would think MGM still owns it, so I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. But it's amazing. Now, of course, Friday they had Memento Mori. I thought, oh, this is going to be some, you know, goofy episode with Vala. Actually, it turned out pretty good, you know?
Yeah, I enjoyed both episodes on Friday.
Yeah. And then they, of course, they opened with her. They did a, you know, jump back and forth, you know, between the present and a few days earlier with her at that bar, or not the bar, with that at that diner, and she couldn't remember because she got kidnapped, and they tried to get her because she was a host, right?
Yeah, and they're trying to take the memories out of her. Evidently, when the gold was in her, betrayed this woman that's trying to get the memory to find some treasure map that she lied about. So.
And so then, as Vala's getting rescued, you know, the thing gets shot and her mind gets, wiped, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she was on a date, Daniel just says it wasn't it. I thought that was kind of cool.
That was good, and he's like, it's not a date, it's two people at work go out, and of course she's like, no, it's a date. And I thought that was just great, and he's just like, you know, he wanted to thank her for proving him right that he had faith in her, and then she's like, I gotta go to the bathroom, which I thought,
well,
that cracked me up.
Yeah, because he interrupted her, and then I guess he thought she was going to say something, you know, momentous, and actually, I have to go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
And then I like how the waiter came by and offered what the special drinks were, and she goes, oh, we'll have all four of them.
You know? Yeah.
And he said, we'll pace ourselves. Yeah, I thought that was that was pretty good. And what else? And then she goes into the bathroom. Yeah, she gets injected, and they take her away, and then it starts the whole search for her, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now they take her to this warehouse, right? Working on her brain and everything, right? And Daniel really feels, missing her. Wow, he really is starting to, I think he's falling in love with her, huh?
Yeah, I agree. And he's, telling Mitchell that before, when he thought she was dead, he couldn't accept it, and he ended up right. And, he's doing the same thing again. He hopes that he's right this time because he seems to not be accepting it very well, so.
Yeah. And then what else happens? I catch up with my notes here. And as Lander begins to search, the trust team starts probing Vala's memories, and some of those things are interesting. Hopefully, they'll dive more into her past, huh?
Mm-hmm.
And what else happens? A soldier freeing Vala's shot, and then her brain gets wiped. And what else? Then SG-1 gets a report on the loss of SG-15 and most of the trust group inside, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and then Teal'c. Teal'c's running around with a little beanie on his head.
Huh? Again, cover.
Yeah, he looks funny. And then they had to escape. And then what's his name? He commandeers the motorcycle and takes off.
Oh, Mitchell.
Her. Yeah. And then the car flips over, and
she gets out and makes him go with her. So after she steals somebody's car,
yeah,
scares crap out of them.
Yeah, and she makes him drive, and then she ends up taking him to some motel room, and she takes his pants off, right?
Yeah, well, she ties him to the bed. Yeah, I guess she did take his pants off.
Yeah, well, because how did he lose his... Yeah, well, I imagine she had to do it, right?
Cause I didn't think about that until you said that. He did lose his pants, because Sam made a point of saying he's lost them more than once. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's... I don't know. I thought that was funny. Why is she taking... I don't know.
For some reason.
Yeah, and then she goes and gets food, and then
she tries to steal it because she doesn't have any money.
Yeah, and then when the SG-1 comes to rescue him, he says it's not what it looks like because he's got food all over him and stuff, right?
Yeah, no pants. And then I also liked, of course, that they had their little X-File reference. I don't know if you noticed it.
Oh, no. What was that?
When she was working at the diner, she was talking to him and saying that it wasn't her life, and she mentioned something like she's watching X-Files in her spare time. Of course, I enjoyed that. But
that's right. You're a big X-Files fan. And then what else?
So she's with the cops then because they arrest her.
Yeah.
That's after she beats up the guys that try to rob the place. So.
Yeah, the diner. Yeah, and then one cop, I thought he might be a good recurring character to keep around.
Yeah, so. He seemed to want to help.
Yeah.
And then they come in to get her, and it's obviously not Carter that comes in, so.
Yeah. And what else happens? Where am I here? Sal's Diner. I like that whole, the characters. They're all perfectly cast. You know, the guy owns the diner. He seems like some guy you see in the street who runs a diner.
Yeah.
And what else happens? The robber comes in. She flips him over and everything else. And what else? There's a lot going on in this episode. That's the only thing. I had a hard time taking notes because there's so much going on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I said. That's whenever she's arrested and the cop is like, she won't tell him anything. She tells him she don't remember finally, and he just doesn't believe her. And then he's like, the Air Force is coming for you, but it's not Sam. It's somebody pretending to be her.
Yeah.
It takes her away, and then they come in. The real people come in, and that's whenever he steals the bike.
Yeah. And then they end the episode, a big showdown in the warehouse, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Daniel actually ends up stopping her, and he triggers the memories, some of the memories in her to come back. So,
yeah, and then she remembers. And
yeah, I thought that was pretty good. And then at the end, they show Mitchell, because his arm's in a sling because he got shot. And then
give her badges.
Yeah, Landry gives her the badges and everything. So she's now
official part of the team now.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, huh?
And then, of course, they end it with Mitchell saying something about they can all go celebrate. And she's like, okay, it tells Daniel we'll have to wait for a date then. And he's again like, it's not a date. And they all just look at him like, yeah, right. They don't believe anything he's saying now.
Yeah, they know something's going on,
And
yep. I thought it wasn't too bad. Now, who is the standout performer? Was it Vala?
Definitely Vala, yeah.
Yeah, she did well. I thought that cop did real well, too. He did excellent in that role,
Yeah, Mitchell had a lot of funny lines, too.
Yeah,
Mitchell,
and the same thing with his pants. What's her name? She says, you're always losing your pants.
He's like, I lost them twice or something. That's not always. It's bad enough you lost them twice.
And I like the diner. The guy who owns the diner. I thought he was a good character too. So
yeah,
I like all the supporting characters. They're all pretty well cast and everything. I mean, it's I like that whole episode. Scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate Memento Mori?
An 8.
Really?
An 8.5. I really enjoyed it.
Wow. Yeah, because it was not as it was serious, but not as
not too serious.
Yeah, it had some humor and it was earth based and everything else. So, you know, it gave it a different feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
Now they referred to Dr. Lamb. Now who's that?
That's Dr. Lamb.
Is that Landry's daughter?
Yeah.
Now they're mentioning her, so she's still somewhere around, but they're just not.
They're just not
her.
Having her on. I don't know. Guess not for a while. But like I said before, that's Michael Shank's wife, so they'll probably bring her back on if they want her. They shouldn't have too much trouble with that.
Yeah. Well, she's also Andromeda, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So and also wasn't she a character on the 4400? I recall, wasn't she involved with Kyle? Wasn't she the teacher or something like that?
Oh, yeah, that's right. She was, yeah. You're right, yeah, she was. I forgot about that. I haven't watched those ones in a while.
Oh, so yeah, because I'm the season two. I've been watching the season two of the 4400, so I've been catching up. And then we had Stargate Atlantis, was it McKay and Mrs. Miller or something like that?
Yeah, McKay and Mrs. Miller, about his sister.
Yeah.
And she just suddenly starts writing all these math equations, gets in her head that is going to help them to create zero-point energy, so they bring her in, although she's kind of reluctant at first, especially because Rodney's involved.
Yeah, and then because she's with her daughter, right, and all of a sudden something triggers her to do all these equations, and her husband comes in and goes, you know, everything okay, honey, or something like that, right?
Yeah, and she's got them all over the room.
Yeah, and she sends them to somewhere, right, and then whoever it is sends them over to Samantha Carter, right, so she
yep.
gets involved. And then, because she's reluctant to sign the non-disclosure things, she goes and gets Ronnie to come back from Atlantis, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and then Ronnie goes, I thought that whole scene when he goes to her house after 4 years and he was awkward and the kid hugs his leg, you know, and he's awkward, you know.
Yeah, it was cute, though.
And then the husband comes in. Who's this? That's my brother.
Yeah, which you haven't seen for 4 years.
Yeah, and what else happened on that one? And
he beams her or gets her to be beamed out since she won't listen to him.
Yeah, she wouldn't agree to sign it. And I think it was
He kind of got her to just because he was like, well, this will help, but I can't tell you what it is unless you sign it. So kind of goaded her into going that way, I think.
Yeah. Now the actress who played his sister is his real life sister.
Yes.
Yeah, so it was Kate Hewlett, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. What's with all these Kates on these sci-fi shows? You know, Katie, Kate, I don't know. And then what else? Now, you know what? I lost the last half of the episode for some reason. I don't know if my tape clunked out or the power went out at home, but I lost the last half. I got it when they were on the ship. She was, like, and they first beamed her up to the ship. Then I lost the rest of the episode.
She was looking at the Earth and totally, you know, doesn't believe it at first. Because he tells her they're teleported, and she's like, that's as likely as time travel. And then, of course, him and Sam look at each other like, yeah, we've already done that. and then the thing I loved is that she called him Meredith. His real name is Meredith Rodney McKay.
Wow.
And, of course, he doesn't like that, and Sam thinks it's funny. So, but the whole point of the episode is that they're trying to create zero-point energy because they can't just use the ZPMs. And they make a mention that he destroyed a whole solar system trying to do that before, but they're trying to bridge a parallel universe so they can get rid of whatever, I don't know, dangerous particles it gives off without hurting people.
Yeah. And then now somehow another Rodney shows up, right?
Yeah. When they turn on the machine, he comes through from the other dimension, and he's like, you know, there's people there, you're hurting us, you're destroying our world. And his alternate reality is obviously much different because he says how Shepard is so much different that he makes McKay there look modest, which I thought was great.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. And then, McKay is kind of like jealous of the other one because he feels like his turf is threatened, right?
Yeah, and he thinks they like him more because they're laughing with him and everything. And
yeah, because he's cooler, right? Because I've read something where that scene where he first comes up, the second McKay, it's like out of the Terminator. He's wearing the leather jacket
and
everything.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, he's got his hair all spiked and.
Yeah, I thought that was. And then, now how they get rid of the second McKay?
Well, they somehow hook it up so they can get transmissions from the other alternate reality, and they have to do something basically to reverse it. But if they do this, it will take up a lot of their energy out of the ZPM. But they decide to do that anyway, so they don't like destroy their whole galaxy, and. He thinks that he can go back. He finally finds out he can go back through when they turn it on. And at first, or two, like, the real McKay's like, you know, why do you want to leave they like you here. And he, you know, tells them, you know, that he's kind of jealous of him because he can say what he wants, and, you know, but he still wants to go home. So but that was pretty interesting. Mm.
Now, how did the two McKays, separate,
Walt, they call the other one Rod instead of Rodney. And he's just kind of more cool, laid back. He's not so, I don't want to say stuck on himself, but I guess that is the good thing. He doesn't brag all the time. And it sounds more like that's what Shepard does there, because he plays golf with Shepard, and they're talking, and he's telling him about his world and everything. And then Rodney talks to Shepard later, and he's like saying, you know, he feels bad because she hates him, and it's his own fault. And so he seems to want to change. And then later she gets to see the video he made before to her when he thought he was dying. So that was nice.
Oh, yeah. Because that was like in the first season or something like that, right?
Yeah, I think so. It was when the Wraiths were coming. They thought they were going to all die.
Yeah. Huh. And
Go ahead.
And then at the end, does the other Ronnie die, or he just goes back to his own universe?
No, they have him going through, and it's depleting the power too fast. They want to turn it off, but he's like, you know, no, it'll kill him. So they leave it on, and the bridge ends up collapsing, and he goes, I guess, gets through, but the ZPM is, like, completely depleted now. So they can't really go back to Earth. I mean, they say something like they'll still be able to, but it's not going to be like before. Like, they won't be able to go back very often. And then basically at the end, other than him telling his sister goodbye, it is funny, they're all laughing again together, and they're telling him they found the other Rodney creepy because he was nice all the time. So they didn't like him as much as I guess he thought they did. So.
Really? And now, so scale of MVP from this one, who do you think is McKay?
Yeah.
And scale of 1 to 10 on this one?
About the same thing. Well, at least an 8.5.
Really?
3.5, 9, yeah. I don't know. I liked the SG-1 a lot. I really did. But I also liked this, had more of the comedy, too. I really like McKay. He's a great character. And whenever it's got a lot of him in it, it's usually good. So.
Yeah, well, I saw one of the sites that some of the lines that they said, it was McKay was worried that McKay was going to, McKay was worried that Shepard was going to pick up his sister, and he said, hey, calm down, Kirk, or something like that.
Married. And he's like, I was just saying hi. And he's like, I've seen that look before, Kirk, or something like that, yeah.
And then now next week is, what episode is this next week coming up?
SG-1 is Company of Thieves,
there we go.
Which is where Mitchell goes undercover inside the Illusion Alliance to try to save his team because they're captured by them. And the Atlantis one is called Phantoms, and there was hardly anything on that. It just says that Shepard and Ronan are influenced by a mind-altering device created by the Wraith while on a mission to rescue a lost team.
Oh,
somebody sabotaged the gate so they can't get back.
Really? Yeah, because I'm on gateworld.net. Yeah, and they're trying to save SG-1, I don't know. I mean, if they can't air it here in the United States, I don't know how they're going to be able to save the series. I don't know. But, and then on the 21st, they're going to have a Atlantis Season 3 marathon, huh? Wow. And then on the 22nd, it's going to be an SG-1 Season 10 marathon. So it must be getting close to the mid-season finales there. Because then SG-1 on the 22nd is going to air The Quest Part 1. And Atlantis is going to air the Return Part 1. So
then they'll probably split it, yeah.
Yeah, so they're slowly building up. Did you see the thing on did you watch Conan O'Brien?
I missed it.
Oh,
I didn't
hilarious.
Know he was going to talk about it, or I would have.
I just happened to be watching it. It had the guy in the recliner, Recliner Rage, or whatever it is, Recliner, that guy, and he talks about, he's mad at Sci-Fi Channel for canceling Stargate SG-1.
I'm kind of curious. I wonder if he was actually ever in the episode. I know they showed the clip on Conan, but I never actually remember seeing him when the episode aired, so.
But
I think they cut it.
Yeah, that guy was funny. And he's all, we're left with, at Stargate Atlantis, and he said Battlestar Galactica. So I thought that was pretty cool,
Yeah.
But I don't know about that little giggle the audience did when you mentioned Battlestar Galactica. I heard the audience kind of giggled a little bit, so.
I don't know. I didn't see it. I would have liked to. But I think it's a little download, though.
Yeah.
The other thing I found that was bad that was on its site is that it does say that the ratings on SG-1 it says and Atlantis, have slipped after the 200th episode. Because it says Counter-Strike got a 1.5 average household rating, down 0.4, and Atlantis got a 1.6, a little bit above for Common Ground.
And last week we had the technical problems and everything. Now, have you been watching the webisodes?
Of Battlestar?
Yes.
No, I still haven't gotten a chance yet.
Really? I don't know. It's okay. I mean, it doesn't really add much. Basically, they're all talking, and they have some chick on there, some redhead. She's running around, and Ty showed up and one with Tyrol and the baby and stuff. So it's all right. I wish it would be longer, like 30-minute episodes or something.
Yeah. That's to connect for the new season, to connect together? Or?
Well, they say you don't have to watch those to know what's going on. It's just like backstory. It takes place after the season finale and before the season premiere, because after the season, when the season premieres, it's going to be 4 or 6 months later, whatever it's going to be.
I did get one thing today, though. I remember vaguely hearing about it, and then I forgot about it. I don't know why, but I went to the comic book store today and got the number zero for the Battlestar comic book.
Oh, really? How is it? How much?
Yeah,
did it cost?
I really liked it. I don't know so much about the art inside. It doesn't look like them per se, but the story's really good. It's so far about they find a ship that is being attacked by Cylons, and all the people on it are people that have died.
Oh,
and then it. And they're Adama's telling Kara went in to try to save them, and Adama's telling her to pull back. And then she sees Zach, her fiance that's dead, that was Apollo's brother and Adama's son, and that's where it ended. And it's like, now I got to wait for the first, to get the other one out. No. They're only 25 cents. Their promo issues, so
really, that's cheap. 25 cents? Are you kidding?
Yeah, usually the comic number books, zero. That's
wow, because usually comic books are like $1.75 or something like that. That's amazing.
Yeah. Now, there's multiple covers, I know. I got two covers. One is like the sketch, and it's with Six and Baltar. Mm-hmm. And then the other one is just like a photograph of Six.
Oh, yeah.
And then there's like a drawing of her, but it was like a lot because it was one of the special covers. So
It was a good comic book then. Now, so the storylines are like similar to what's going on in the series then, huh?
Yeah, although it's... I don't know. I'm not sure exactly when it's supposed to be going on, because it's somewhere in the middle, because I was confused, because she mentioned, the president mentioned about them finding the Arrow of Athena, whatever it was,
really?
And finding that, but yet it's got to be beforehand, because obviously things haven't happened yet. All the characters are still there. Billy's still in it, so I guess it's sort of at the beginning. I was kind of confused, though, about the Arrow of Athena, but it might just be so you kind of know what's going on a little bit.
Yeah, well, I wonder if something happens on the series, it's going to mess up with like the comic books. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, man. And then, because the webisodes are on every Tuesday and Thursday, they're posting a new webisode. Like, Ty is like the big star of these webisodes, because he's been in, the last two, I think, so it's pretty cool. Good. I like the actor. He does an outstanding job as Ty. They haven't gotten to his eye being gouged out yet, so when that's going to happen.
We'll see that sometime. I seen that Ranger saying that number one's out. If they didn't have it there, I would have gotten it.
Oh.
I don't know. And I don't know if you can order this. He's asking if you can order them online. I have no idea. I just know they had them at the comic book store. I went in today to see just if there's anything I hadn't seen in there, and I spotted them on the shelf. I'm like, I gotta have that.
That's funny. Yeah. Well, who's the publisher? Is Dynamite, right? That Ranger saying from Dynamite's website, you order the comic books for Battlestar Galactica.
Sounds right. I don't have it out here, so I'm not sure if that sounds right. A lot of it, it was really short because it was cheap, and it had a few pages of like ads for other comic books. So
really?
I think it was more of a advertising thing, it's number zero, just kind of like getting you there.
Really?
But I know that they said that they could subscribe you to it there, but
really,
that's about it.
Now, when we bring on NetRanger in a couple minutes, talking about the fall season, for those who didn't hear last week, now what shows are you looking forward to in the fall? Are you looking forward to Heroes?
Yes, definitely Heroes, and definitely the most is still Lost, though. I got to say, I'm still obsessed with that. But and like I said, I also like Kyle XY. But for the new shows, definitely Heroes.
Heroes. What about Jericho?
Jericho sounds good too. Yeah. I think Heroes is gonna be the best. I just don't know if it'll last.
Yeah. Now, how about this Friday night lineup they're gonna do? They're gonna start it off, I guess, with Night Stalker, and then it's gonna be Heroes, and then Doctor Who, and then Battlestar Galactica, and then some other show, Threshold.
On Sci-Fi, they're putting
All these shows. Yeah, well, yeah, because it's going to re-air on Fridays.
Okay. Maybe Sci-Fi will pick it up after then, because I'm assuming it's going to be canceled. I don't know, though. It's different, though, because I was reading in the TV Guide, it says how it's not so much based on, like, it's not like them going off and saving people as much as it's how they're coping with having these in their everyday life and having to still live and you know, deal with that. So
it's like a 4400.
More character-based.
It's like a 4400 all over again.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, it sounds really good. I just hope it at least gets a chance.
Hmm. And, well, I just thought, I'm thinking, man, it's too many shows on a Friday night. You know what I mean? They got, you know, four shows?
Yeah, but if they're ones they've already watched, though, I mean, I don't know. I mean, like, for me, like, I'll have already watched it during the week, you know, so to some extent you might not.
Yeah, because Night Stalker and then Threshold, it's going to air after Battlestar, so.
Yeah, they'll run out of Night Stalkers pretty soon. I don't know if there's many left.
No, they only did 13, so how many more of these shows can you watch?
I mean, I don't know. I don't remember. I saw it last week, and I don't remember seeing it before that, so that one I think either was new or somehow I missed.
Yeah.
Because I like that show. They should have canceled it. Good.
So, well, Jamie, we'll let you go at the end of our segment.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, Brianna. Talk to you next week.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Okay, bye.
And that was Jamie, otherwise known as Scully Girl, with our review of the Stargate episodes. And it pisses me off, pardon the French, that I missed that second half of that episode on Friday with McKay and Mrs. Miller. I thought, oh, man, I like Stargate Atlantis much more than SG-1. SG-1 just, I don't know, I feel like you're in one long funeral. And in just a moment or so, we'll be joined by Dr. Net Ranger, the mad rocket scientist of the program.
Hey.
And yes.
On Spike, I don't know if you mentioned this. Maybe I missed it. On Spike, they have that, you know how TBS used to have dinner and a movie?
Oh, yeah.
And Spike has that poker
casino show, in a movie.
Yeah, they show a movie and then they come back and they're playing poker.
Yeah, with the guy from Sopranos.
Yeah.
What the hell is his name? It's so cheesy.
Well, they're going to have the two, they're going to have, I don't remember their names. The two girls from...
Battlestar?
Battlestar.
Ooh,
on there.
Really?
What's her name? Park?
Oh, Grace Park.
Grace Park
and Kitty?
The blonde hair chick, the tall one.
Oh, six?
Yeah.
Ah, so
just thought you might want to know that.
Thank you very much for that. Yes. Last week we ended up with...
Just make you have your Kleenex there handy.
And my favorite towel. And yeah, last week, those of you couldn't hear the program, Net Ranger was on, and we got through Wednesday. We just started talking about Wednesday. So hopefully we can skip through the rest of the week pretty good fashion. Jericho looks like it'll be an outstanding program. Like I said, these sci-fi based shows, I mean, it's not pure laser shoot 'em up type of a series, but they don't seem to last in the networks. But hopefully this is grounds for Sci-Fi Channel to pick up some of these programs, you know what I'm saying? So I think now we're joined by the mad rocket scientist. And Dr. Net Ranger, are you there, sir?
Yes, sir.
That's our Airwolf music because we're talking about TV series.
Well, it's very dramatic.
Very dramatic. So, anyway.
What is that, the theme song?
From Airwolf.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, with, what the hell was his name? I remember that. Ernest Borgnine was in it.
Michael Jan. What's his
Michael
name? Vincent.
Jan Michael Vincent.
There you go.
Yeah, that's right.
That was a pretty good program, but I don't know how you can make a show out of a. Maybe the helicopter talked the way Kit did. Maybe. Easy up on the throttle. Maybe it could have been a woman. You know? Oh, watch out for the throttle, boy. Anyway, last week you're with us. We got to Wednesday. We were talking about the Wednesday programs.
Right.
And I switched my reference magazine to the TV Guide one because the Entertainment Weekly is a little too hard to follow because they kind of jump around a lot. And we talked about Jericho. Jericho, you saw that. So it's going to be an outstanding series, huh?
Right.
And Justice Knowledge. So we hit all the new shows. Justice, 20 Good Years, that's that show. I don't think it's going to last with John Lithgow and the other guy, Jeffrey Tambor. I don't think so. That was
It's one that's kind of a modern odd couple, I think.
Yeah, Jeffrey Tambor, boy, he's been around forever because I remember him on The Ropers. He played the neighbor to The Ropers, and I spun him off from Three's Company. I don't know if you remember that show or not. But
yeah, that was quite a while ago, but yeah, I remember that.
That was a bald dude, right?
Right.
And then he's on Gary Shandling's show. And then he was on Arrested Development. He played the father in jail on Arrested Development. Yeah. You know? Right?
Yeah.
So, and what do we see here? And until Thursday, we have Till Death, which is the Brad Garrett program. Now, did you get a pilot from that?
Yeah, I did. That's actually pretty funny.
Really?
That was another one that was kind of writing off, thinking, you know, it's just another romantic comedy, you know, short sitcom. But, Brad Garrett actually, I think, might be able to carry it from a... Everyone
so?
Loves Raymond. Yeah,
really?
That's where he was really popular, and he does a good job in it.
So really?
That's one to look for, I think.
Well, they're saying so. It's on Fox, though. It just seems odd. That sitcom kind of, I think, should be over on CBS or something like that. You know,
it should definitely be CBS or NBC, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know why they just didn't spin him off from his character on Raymond, you know?
Yeah, I think there was some talk of that at one point, but...
I thought that would have made more sense, but... and then you have, what else, ABC is bringing you Ugly Betty.
Right, and that show's getting a lot of buzz. I haven't seen the pilot for it yet, but it's actually getting kind of an amazing amount of buzz on the internet.
Really?
It's based on, I believe it's a Colombian soap opera.
Oh.
It's kind of a plain Jane girl gets a job as a... basically a gopher at a high-profile magazine where everybody else is beautiful.
Huh. Yeah, it's a telenovela, as they call it, I guess,
right?
Right, yeah. Now, Ugly Betty, I was looking at the... It's like, I'm glad I grabbed the TV Guide because it gives you the schedule.
I mean, I did the same thing, actually.
Yeah, it's a pretty loaded Thursday night lineup there because got My Name is Earl, Smallville, Survivor, Till Death, and Ugly Betty. I mean, that's a lot of top-notch shows going up against one another, huh?
Yeah, Thursday night is definitely the one that's going to make the TiVos hop.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of wondering how I'm going to get everything that I need to record just for the website.
Like I said, I just know, were you going to watch all these shows? I'm busy taping all the news and the politics.
Yeah. Well, the other in that same time slot, the other one that's a big deal this time is Survivor.
Oh,
Have you heard about what they're doing?
Oh, with the racial mix-up, yeah.
They're breaking the teams up by race into four different teams, a black team, a white team, an Asian team, and a Hispanic team.
Yeah, I know, and they're catching flack about it. I'm like, oh, come on. It's a TV show. If you don't like it, don't watch it,
Yeah.
You know what I think they should do? They should do a 2008 Survivor, have Democrats versus Republicans, have them slug it out on some island somewhere.
He'll get you and El Jimbo on opposite teams there.
I don't know what's wrong with him. I mean, I made no pretense. This is a dictatorship on this program, This is subjected to Democrats first hour,
Yeah, well, that's right. He can come over on the message board, though.
Yeah, go to MediaBoulevard.com and have at me. I just think you got enough conservative programs, and then the liberals should have some time. Anyway, I'm taking away from this review. I get wound up. So, and then Ugly Betty, and that's a limited run series. It's a telenovela, so that's only supposed to last, one season, right?
Right.
And
actually, most of the shows this time around, most of the shows pretty much across the board on most of the networks are only getting 13 show pickups.
Wow.
I've noticed that a lot more this year.
Huh.
Even the big ones, Heroes, Friday Night Lights, the ones that are being heavily promoted,
13?
So far only have 13 show orders.
Really? They don't want to spend put so much money in if it's serious and it's not going to last, I guess, huh?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
IO Raptor is saying Smallville is still going. Yeah, well, this year to bring it on Green Arrow on there, right?
Right.
And Green Arrow is supposed to be going to try and form the Justice League and all that,
Yeah, and it's the guy that was going to play Aquaman in the pilot that didn't make it. So I guess they were just so impressed with him in that pilot, they brought him over as the new character on Smallville.
Yeah, now what happened to Bruce Wayne? I thought Bruce Wayne was supposed to show up in Smallville.
Well, that was a rumor a couple of years back.
Yeah.
They never followed through with that. They brought the Flash on. They brought Cyborg, who was kind of a different generation. He was one of the Teen Titans.
Yeah.
Different character, different generation of superheroes, but they had his character. Smallville.
You need the top drawer there. You need Batman to show up and kick Tom Welling's ass all over Smallville.
Well, I think they'll definitely have Batman on there before the show goes off the air.
Really?
I don't know if they'll do it this season, but
I think that. Well, yeah. Well, because Green Arrow is like a vigilante, and they said Clark is he doesn't like vigilantes, and hello, Batman's
right.
A vigilante. More or less a vigilante.
The Green Arrow character that they're. The character that they're bringing on is also going to be a billionaire, like Lex Luthor. So,
And then also on Thursday night on CBS, they're bringing Shark on. This is a legal program with James Woods and the hot Jerry Ryan from Voyager. Oh, I'd be like to watch that.
I'll definitely be there for that one. Just for her, not for the show.
Now,
the pilot for that is actually pretty good, too. It's kind of an interesting premise. It starts out Shark, the Wood character is a defense lawyer, and he gets some rich client off, who's obviously guilty, kind of in the opening of it. And the guy basically goes home and kills his wife a few hours later. And so Shark is just, so kind of mortified by what he did. He switches sides and becomes a prosecutor.
Wow. Huh. And any show with Jerry Ryan is in always has a leg up on the competition. You know what I mean?
So oh yeah.
I watched her on that Boston program, that Boston School, Boston. What's
Boston,
it? Boston Public.
Public, yeah.
Yeah, that was a pretty good series as well. I'm surprised they didn't hang around. And then on ABC, they're bringing you 6 Degrees. That's what, six people who are. They meet and they affect everybody's lives or something like that.
Well, it's kind of a. Did you see the movie Crash?
Yes.
Won the Academy Award last year. It's kind of a similar concept to that. Just like very different people with different lives and different stories, but the stories all kind of coincide in different ways,
really?
In surprising ways. I think that one, the pilot was good, but I think it'd make a good movie of the week. I don't know that they can carry that for a full season.
Yeah, some of these shows, I mean, so much of these, drawn-out shows you can like. You got Vanished and Kidnapped and all that, and, the 24 and all that. Some of these, it may be good in concept, but, it might be just too much for the people to watch, you know?
Yeah, and it's kind of hard, too, in, the serialized, action shows like mm-hmm. that. If you miss a week, you're you just can't come back into the show.
Yeah, and the networks don't like them because the reruns. Nobody watches the reruns,
Right.
And then also on Fox, they're going to have Happy Hour, which is, what the hell is this about? A heartbroken Henry moves in with his swinging upstairs neighbor so he can keep an eye on his ex-girlfriend, Heather. Oh, that's not going to last.
Yeah, that's one I'm not recording.
3 weeks. I give that one 3 weeks. Always give them the season premieres. And then this another one now. Now we move over to Friday, right? That's the last new show.
Yeah, well, you actually missed.
Who'd I miss?
One thing that's kind of interesting, the block, the middle hour block, it's 7 o'clock here, I guess, 8 o'clock the 8 o'clock in Colorado, mm-hmm. so it's 9 o'clock in a lot of the markets. But Grey's Anatomy, the original CSI, and Supernatural are up against each other. And then Deal or No Deal over on NBC.
Then the OC and Fox.
That's right.
Slugfest there, huh?
Oh, yeah, that's. I don't know how they're going to do that. I mean, I guess they figured. ABC finally figured that. Grey's Anatomy was something that could actually take on CSI.
Well, CSI's been so many years. I mean, you're getting sick of that show,
Yeah, it's still the number one show, though, isn't it?
Really? Yeah, it's still doing well, but I mean, it made it to a CSI Scranton or something like that, or Oklahoma City, or some hick town somewhere, Myrtle Beach or something like that.
Yeah, and by Boulder, Colorado or something.
There you go. And we go over to Friday. Men in Trees, that's that Anne Hesse show. She moves up to Alaska. It sounds like a Northern Exposure type of a series, huh?
Yeah, that's another one, though. Just the buzz I'm getting on that, I kind of give that one 3 weeks, maybe four.
Really? It's not going to last, huh?
I don't think so.
Wow.
The lead into it, they're actually, right now, you probably have the same page in front of you that I do, but they're mm-hmm. doing a Grey's Anatomy encore, so they're repeating Grey's. I guess just in case it doesn't make it against CSI, they're going to play it again on Friday.
Really? So they're going to encore Grey's Anatomy on Friday. That's odd. Usually, I know the last couple of years, the networks have been doing it on Saturdays. I wonder why they're choosing a Friday. Usually Friday... Go ahead.
I think it really is the fact. I think they're really afraid to take on, that time block. I mean, you lose the younger audience between Supernatural and the OC.
Yeah.
Deal or No Deal was such a, mega hit last year. And then going against, the two shows from the top three going head-to-head.
Yeah.
So I think ABC is just buying insurance.
Really? Now, the Anne Hesse show, that's an hour-long series?
Really? Yeah.
I thought that was supposed to be a sitcom or something, but...
No, it's a drama.
Yeah, she gets straight in Elmo, Alaska, so interesting. And then, because that's up against, you have Friday, you got Crossing Jordan, you got SmackDown, Ghost Whisperer, Grey's Anatomy, the Encore, and Nanny 911 on Fox, so...
Right.
SmackDown probably for me.
Yeah. Well, actually, Ghost Whisperer is a pretty good show. Started watching that kind of partway through last season, but
really?
The interesting premise, it's a woman who can see ghosts, or she can see dead people.
Yeah, that's with, what's her name?
Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Oh, yes. She's always nice to see.
Yeah, she actually she ended up doing a lot of the production of that show herself. She put a lot of her own money into that show, and she really hadn't had anything since, Party of Five a few years ago.
Yeah, she talks to the ghosts and everything. Yeah, she's nice and perky there on Party of Five, right?
Yeah, and they had kind of a major ending. They killed off the second main character on the show at the end of the last season. So
and Crossing Jordan, that show is still on. I thought they canceled that one.
No, it's still on, still going.
Now, who's in that now? No, oh, I get that mixed up with Judging Amy all the time. I get
yeah.
that. In, now, Judging Amy is gone, right?
Right, that okay. ended like 2 years ago.
Oh, okay. Okay, these shows are like on right after. You know, then in Crossing Jordan, she plays like a Quincy, right?
Right.
Yeah, so I've been hit or missing that show. That show is it's pretty good, you know?
Yeah, that's another one of the CSI type spinoffs, mm-hmm. I think, with just that kind of genre was so popular, everybody decided to do their own version.
Yeah. And then, what else we have? And then we have Close to Home. Now, what's that? That's, wait a minute. What's Close to Home? What's that?
That's actually returning. That was on last season. I'm actually not sure what that's about. I didn't watch that one.
Because I don't see it in the listing of the new series. It must be a returning show.
Yeah, I think TV Guide will do the returning shows next week.
Yeah, and then Las Vegas, Men in Trees, and then Trading Spouses, Meet Your New Mommy on Fox.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. And Las Vegas is still the powerhouse on that time slot, I think, huh?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and then, of course, at 10 o'clock, 9 Central is Law and Order, Numbers, and 2020. So,
right.
Yeah. And then on TV Guide skips over to Sunday, so there's nothing on Saturdays except for football?
Football and, let's see, there's a Crime Time Saturday and 48 Hours on CBS, Cops on Fox.
So pretty much the networks are giving up on the Saturday altogether.
Yeah, I think it's just kind of a, well, for Media Boulevard, that's kind of our break night and we catch up.
Yeah.
I think because there's so many other shows on during the week. But.
And then Sunday's another big night. I wish they moved Battlestar over to Sundays on Sci-Fi because it's the most... most viewed night of the week of television. You know?
Yeah, there's really nothing on Sunday. I mean, you still have Desperate Housewives over there, and then Cold Case and Without a Trace, but there's nothing really new contending on Sunday night.
Yeah, well,
Brothers and Sisters, I'm not too sure about that. That's another kind of a bunch of siblings that are all adults now and kind of interacting with each other, and didn't really do it for me.
Really? Now, that show's gone through some upheaval, apparently, according to TV Guide. And I did, you know, we hinted about this last week, that
right.
Sally Field's been brought in to take over for Barbara Buckley from Eight Is Enough. And it's about a family, and they gather for the father's birthday or something, and he dies, the patriarch.
Yeah.
And he dies, and it's it's like a Dallas type of thing, I think, with all these secrets coming out and everything.
Yeah,
so.
it's a family drama, family secrets. Probably, Dallas is probably a good description of it.
So that might, as much as it's a troubler, that might just stand out because I think especially here in the United States, we're looking for some escapism, and that might be something really over the top soap opera with all these bigger than life characters and this money, so you can lose yourself. It's like with Galactica, you lose yourself in the stories and the characters on Galactica.
Right, and that does have a. Balthazar Getty is in there. He's I'm not sure if you're familiar with him. He's kind of a young actor. He's really popular, but he really hasn't had a show that's hit. I think the last, there's something called Pasadena that was on a few years back, kind of the biggest one that he was in. But he's got a pretty big following, and I think he'll probably draw some of that over with him.
Huh.
He's, I think, a grandson or something of the Getty from the Getty Museum in L.A.
Oh, really? So he's super rich then. So
probably.
And then, let's see, what else is on Sunday? The only new show is Brothers and Sisters and The Game, right? The Game is a spinoff of, what show is that, Girlfriend or something like that?
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's with the chick from Sister to Sister, Tia Mowry. She's going to be on that.
Right.
Right. And what else?
And that was on UPN. So that's part of the merger with UPN and WB.
Oh, it's the CW. That's right, CW.
Yeah.
So, and then, so Sundays, really, the only new shows on Sundays going to be this Brothers and Sisters and the, Girlfriends, right?
Right.
Or The Game, I guess.
Right, and with the Sunday Night Football block, I mean, that's going to take a lot of the viewing audience, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody's going to be watching either football or Desperate Housewives.
Yeah, well, I mean, you got pretty solid because you got The Amazing Race, Extreme Makeover Home Edition, which is opening up in Alaska,
right.
And then the Girlfriends, The Simpsons, and then the football, and then the American Dad, The Game at 8:30, and then 9 is pretty solid. You got the America's Top Model, Cold Case. I've been catching up with that. That's an outstanding show as well.
Yeah, this one, I don't watch it regularly, but I do enjoy it when I see it.
Yeah, and then Desperate Housewives and Family Guy.
And then 9:30 is The War at Home. It's a returning series. And then Brothers and Sisters at 10 and Without a Trace. So I think Without a Trace might suffer from the Brothers and Sisters, huh?
Yeah, that could definitely happen. Yeah. You might actually be right about Brothers and Sisters. Maybe we should start a pool or something.
Yeah.
Guess when they're going to end and have a big prize.
And what else? Now, what other pilots did you get? Now, the cast-offs channels from the merger of UPN and the WB, the Fox scooped them up for the My Network TV, right?
Well, actually, they scooped up the stations, mm-hmm. not the shows. My Network TV is trying to... They have Desire and Fashion House, which are two new shows that they're doing, and I think they're going to repeat throughout the week. But, you know, pretty much every town had both a UPN and a WB, or every mm-hmm. market had a station that was a WB and a UPN station. So My Network basically swept in, and whichever of the stations didn't get sucked into the CW, they picked up.
Hmm. Yeah, because Saturday I happened to watch the recaps of these soaps they had on there, the Fashion House and then Desire. I'm like, both of them are just, you know, horrendous.
Yeah.
The only one slightly better than the other one is Fashion House, because you get to look at Bo Derek for an hour. You know?
Yeah.
And then the end of the show with, I guess, Morgan Fairchild's character is somehow behind, because Bo Derek's character's fashion business is failing, I guess, or something. She had to take out loans and everything. And I guess Morgan Fairchild's character has been bankrolling this, right?
You know, I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I guess I don't normally watch those shows. But.
No, I just thought, because I thought, well, you know, Morgan Fairchild and Bo Derek, I mean, we'll see.
Well, Morgan Fairchild hasn't been in anything for a while. This is kind of I guess it's good for her.
Yeah, the last time I remember her, she was making out with Roseanne. Didn't she kiss Roseanne or something?
Did she?
No, that was the other one. That was, Hemingway. Muriel Hemingway, I think, kissed Roseanne.
Yeah.
So, interesting. Now of all the shows, now the fall lineup, now, do you have any favorites?
Well, Heroes, definitely.
Heroes?
And we talked about that last week, but I was really pretty worried about that on NBC. I don't know that it'll last on NBC, but I think on Sci-Fi, you know, the show is really, I think, going to be relatively cheap to make. I mean, the special effects and the pilot, you know, they have people flying and, you know, doing some things like that, but it's more camera tricks. I mean, not like Battlestar or a Doctor Who where you have the really heavy special effects.
Yeah, and...
So I think it could pick up some audience over there.
On Sci-Fi. And then, some of the cable shows, I'm just paging through the TV Guide. They got the House of Carters. I can't believe it. They're giving them their own reality show, but Aaron and Nick Carter and their sisters are getting their reality series.
Yeah, so. That and Gene Simmons, I guess, is getting a...
Yes. Oh, no, here he has his, The Family Jewels. I was watching that series as well.
Oh, is that on already? Yeah, I just saw the commercial for that.
It's not too bad, but anything's better than that Growing Up Gotti. That show is just awful.
Oh, yeah, that's horrible.
You know, I sit there under by gunpoint. I'll sit through that show again. I mean, that show is just a horrible show.
Yeah,
now, how about the big news about Anna Nicole's son dying today, huh?
Yeah, yesterday, I guess it was.
Or yesterday.
20 years old. That was kind of a sudden thing.
Yeah,
and, not really seeing what happened yet. A bunch of different stories are coming out about that.
Yeah, because...
First they were saying he died in bed, and then they said he had a massive heart attack in her hospital room.
Yeah, because he went to visit his mother. She gave birth in the Bahamas to the baby girl, and then the son came down, and then the next thing you know, he's in a room, and he goes down with a heart attack.
Yeah.
So I wonder what brought that on. I mean, and they said there's no... He had no history of drug abuse or anything like that, but they said apparently on... his father's side of family, or somebody's side of family, that there was heart disease in the family.
Yeah.
But that's young. They have a heart attack.
Yeah, it's really, really sad when somebody that young has something like that happen.
Frightening. You know? I mean, it's terrible. And then on cable, what show is looking for on cable? Battlestar?
yeah, Battlestar. Well, the sci-fi lineup. Doctor Who, of course. I mean, you know, Koenig's not here, so I guess I can talk about that for a little bit. But this new season of Who is great. I've actually seen the whole thing already.
Really?
We've got a part of Media Boulevard. Some of our owners are in the UK, so I've got people that recorded it for me.
Outstanding. Well, yeah, because Koenig offered to send him. I go, no, I want to watch it with the rest of the American viewing public. You know.
Well, yeah. You know, I was actually... The first episode or two, I was kind of turned off on it. I didn't really like David Tennant, and I think I mentioned this before when I was on one time, but he had a role in the Harry Potter movie. He was one of the bad guys in the Goblet of Fire movie. I was kind of looking at that, seeing that character for a while, but he really grows on you, and that show just really takes off. And you get to see some real sci-fi. They go to, you know, other universes and other planets, and you get to see Doctor Who's mortality. There's actually an episode where you think the guy is going to die, and he's kind of afraid of dying.
Really?
And that's kind of a different than anything they brought in the first season.
Interesting. And then actually they have the Fox is going to have a late night show called the Spike Feuerstein Show. Yeah, you know? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, this summer actually had some really good shows. They're all kind of wrapping up now, but there's one, Blade, over on Spike TV. Mm-hmm. That was their big show. Blade the Vampire Hunter.
Mm-hmm. That was a spinoff of the movie. And did you watch it? Was that good?
Yeah, that was really good, actually.
Huh. And what about Eureka? Scully Girl's asking about Eureka.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything about if they're going to renew that or not, but that's another good one. There actually are two other shows coming on Sci-Fi that are going to be mid-season that we're kind of getting a lot of buzz about. One is called The Dresden Files.
Dresden Files.
And they've actually released the pilot, and it was kind of really interesting. They released the pilot at Comic-Con, but it's not finished yet. They don't have all those special effects in. But it's a detective story, but Dresden, the star of the show, is a wizard.
Really?
As well as being a detective, and it's based on a pretty popular series of books.
Huh.
So I think that starts in January.
So you think that's going to be a good series then, huh?
Yeah, it's really good. I actually read the books a few years ago, so I was kind of looking forward to it, and I wasn't disappointed in the pilot at all.
Huh.
So that could really take off.
And what's the other one?
And it's called The Lost Room. And there's actually, if you go to Media Boulevard Magazine, there's a trailer for The Lost Room on there. It's this guy loses his son and has to go through all of the supernatural stuff and find these magic objects and bring them together to get to the world or to the place where his son was taken.
Hmm.
It actually kind of sounds weird, but the trailer looks really good, so
they're
going to be pushing that pretty heavily during the Battlestar Who hour, both of those shows, actually, I guess.
Well, that should be interesting. Actually, I'm reading this, which is outstanding. I didn't notice that The Librarian 2, Return to King Solomon's Mind, that miniseries that TNT made with Noah Wiley, that's coming back. Oh, that was outstanding. The first one was The Quest for the Spear. Yeah.
Yeah, that should be actually pretty interesting.
Yeah, and Bob Newhart's going to be in it. What kind of cast are they putting together here? Olympia Dukakis and Jane Curtin's going to be in it. Wow.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see what she does.
Should be worth watching just for that mix.
Yeah. No, because when the first one was on, I'm like, oh, too bad I can't, you know, I should make this into a series or something. But, the first one was pretty. Did you watch the first Librarian movie?
Yeah, I saw parts of it. I didn't see the whole thing, actually. I had a kind of an incident like you're talking about with my TiVo not recording the whole thing a couple of times. So.
And what else is going on? And then the comic Insult Dog, he's having a special and everything. So it looks like it's going to be a pretty solid season.
Yeah, and it's really kind of amazing just the way the cable channels are coming in with their own original programming now. It's a...
Well, they have to. They can't rely on these reruns of MASH and everything all the time now. And now we're getting hit over to have with Seinfeld reruns and all this. Need some fresh programming because, you know what? People got more options now. You know, I'll go listen to my iPod or surf the internet, and I'm going to watch a bunch of MASH reruns or Three's Company. You know?
Right. You know, it's kind of really interesting, too, if you just follow the ratings or hear the numbers. You know, like a really big show now is like 20 million viewers. But back when Dallas was on, you know, like the Who Shot JR episode was something like, I think it was 60 or 70 million.
Yeah, yeah, you'll never see those numbers again. You know?
No, no, not with all the choices.
No. Okay, rocket scientists, we have to kill you off for a week. Huh?
Okay.
So we'll maybe talk to you in a couple weeks because I think Stargates are coming to an end, and we'll maybe do a pop culture type of a segment then. Huh?
Okay, sounds good.
Something like that. We'll see what happens. All right, we'll go to MediaBoulevard.com to check up on what's going on there in the magazine. Right?
Okay, and right. Definitely great show tonight.
So. All right. And thanks. Good night. Bye. And I don't know how to end that. I'm sorry. I got stuck. Anyway, in the morning is Daily Noise. Friday is Spank Wagon, followed by King Hesh. I'm Sean Amack, Sean Daly. Go to MediaBoulevard.com and hit the message board. Good night. Have a pleasant tomorrow.
LV Rocks. Noise from Vegas.